Please, the court, counsel, ladies and gentlemen of the audience here. I'm very honored and I appreciate very much, more than you can understand, as an old gray trial dog, getting the opportunity to come into this very special arena. You know, we're used to very different scenarios is where I'm at every day in the courtroom battling it out. And so these conversations we're having here about ineffective assistance of counsel and trial issues are close to my heart, because I'm not the general appellate lawyer that's here every day just arguing appeals, saying, hey, they messed up over there. They should have done this. They should have done that. When things are talked about in light of counsel should have done that, of course, in my mind, I'm running through the process of, would I have thought of this? Is this something that's out in the left field that's unique? Or is this something that's bread and butter, elementary issues? And I don't want to talk about it too long because they've talked about it a lot previously, and I want to get to the other issues that are in my brief, primarily the cooperation problems, and I think they're monster issues, and that's why I spent a lot of time in my brief talking about it. But I do think that it's warrant putting this in just a little bit of perspective, at least as to trial counsel in Jesse's case. This was a multi-day trial, and I think it's becoming apparent now, for those of you who may not have been necessarily thinking about this, logistically, how this trial unfolded. And it unfolded in a bad way. And when I say a bad way, these cases should have never, ever, ever been tried together by one jury. I'm not saying it can't be done, but the way it should be done and the way that I've done it in the past is you run two juries. If you're going to try them together, you run two juries. And if something comes in that's bad for one defendant, that's, say, a prior conviction, or cell phone information is we're related to here, okay, that the state might say, oh, you don't have a right to object to that one. Well, you take the jury out that it's not applicable to. And when the testimony's over, you bring them back in. That's how it's supposed to be done. The problem is, in the bigger picture of what was going on here, Jesse's lawyer, in this multi-day engaging in organized criminal activity case, that the state is alleged that was so bad, multi-day, he makes four objections the whole trial. Four. And so when you're looking at it, I want you to keep that in mind of this bigger issue of deficiency of counsel. Four objections. I'm not saying I'm the best lawyer, but, you know, in a trial like this, I would have been making hundreds of objections.
Going back to the issue about whether maybe a severance motion to sever should have been filed by this trial counsel, wasn't there a hearing on a motion for new trial in your matter where the trial attorney testified as to a strategy why he didn't file a motion to sever?
Yes. Okay. I think those issues were discussed, but these are elementary things that should have been thought through. That there are problems with prior convictions on some that don't affect the other. I mean, this is stuff that's mandatorily reversible error over an objection to be introducing priors of another co-defendant in your case, about getting confessions or things like that in over. I mean, there's multiple ways that you can it's so bread and butter elementary that the four objections during the whole trial is really representative of what this lawyer did or didn't do. I think the truth be known, I think this lawyer was probably scared to go to trial. And he said, I'll ride with somebody else. This other lawyer maybe knows more than me, and I'll just kind of ride with him. But that doesn't excuse his deficient performance. And when you look at an indictment, and on its face, it's outside the statute of limitations, you got to raise a motion to quash on that. I mean, you got to. This is not some complicated issue based upon some new case law that maybe they'll go with me on this. This is bread and butter.
You file a motion to quash, and you've heard the state's argument in the previous case that they say, well, they just reindict with a tolling.
I'm glad you asked me. That's an excellent question. I don't think it got drove home in the last arguments. This is not fixable. That's the problem. This problem is not fixable. That's how deficient it was. The offenses that were alleged in the first indictment and the second indictment are very different. Very different. One thing to say a conspiracy, and it's another thing to say engaging in committing crimes. It's very different. And it wasn't just some extra words. It was meaningful words that prepare for trial different. And they didn't add in just a couple superfluous extra potential participants. That was the cover for them to get in front of this jury, gang activity and membership and all. They had no business in this trial.
How soon after they were reindicted, or he was reindicted, did they commence trial?
Very quickly after, Judge. This was indicted in May, and I think the record shows this lawyer was asking for continuances. That's the problem. They were pushing him, go, go, go. He was trying to get
is it a month, 2 months, 3 months?
I don't remember. I'm sorry. I don't remember the time. But I know it was a very short period of time, and he wasn't given the time, and it was pushed on him very fast. And so, again, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but this tolling language, because it's alleging much, much broader, it's adding in new participants, it's adding in gang activity, it's adding a lot of things, is way outside the scope of the original indictment. And it is my very strong belief that this is not fixable. The state cannot fix it outside the tolling. They have lost it. And so this case never went to trial. It should have been quashed. It would have been a winner either at the trial court or later on appeal on that issue alone. This is a bread and butter elementary issue. And as to the second issue on the search warrant, 18B is there. It's clear. It says search warrant by supportable probable cause within the four corners. We all know the four corners. Counsel is a very smart man. He's a nice man. I commended him earlier. He called me about something he didn't have to. He's very cordial. He's friendly. He's smart. He's a lot smarter than I am. I'm just a dumb country boy, okay? But he's carving out with a very clever argument in saying, look, we only introduced one day at trial. That's not what 18B says. And that's not what the cases are starting to hint around about. Well, maybe we've got to limit this down a little bit. They're talking about the breadth of the warrant. And this warrant is three full days of everything that was never connected at all.
Well, I think he concedes that the affidavit was insufficient.
Yes, I think that is kind of where we're getting to now. And the importance of it, somebody asked, I think it was Justice Cron asked, what's the harm? The harm is huge, because if this would have been brought up and this would have been suppressed, what you would end up with, and we're going to get to in a minute on my cooperation arguments, if you take out, as the law says we're supposed to do, take out the co-defendant statement, take it out, and look what's left. There's nothing here except for the co-defendant and the cell phone. Now, I'm going to still argue very strongly, and I believe in the bottom of my heart, that that's just mere presence alone at best, because the trial testimony was that the cell phone data put him within 3 or 3.5 miles of the crime. That's at best day for the state, mere presence. But if that would have been suppressed, then we're talking about instructed verdict land of what do you got? Anything, state, what is you have to corroborate Mr. Powell's testimony? And they got nothing. They got nothing at trial. They got nothing now. And it's the same problem. There is no corroboration. This lawyer was sitting there sleeping with four objections the whole trial, Judge. He's sleeping, doing nothing, letting all this stuff come in. Nobody's saying nothing. The cops are up there just running their mouths, saying whatever they want to say. And it's all coming from Powell, who's bought and paid for. He says he wants to get his nice deal. And that's what we've got. So anyway, I've spent more time than I want to, and I know that I'm here. Counsel made I loved his argument, really. It's very brilliant. He says, you're entitled to an F-150, not a Rolls-Royce lawyer, okay? I understand and agree with that. But when your lawyer makes four objections the whole trial and does nothing to protect your rights and just sits there on his hands and sleeps, you're getting a Geo Metro defense. I say Geo Metro because my dad had one of these. And it's like a little tin can. I mean, it's nothing. It's dangerous to even drive that thing. And he loved it, but that's what it was. A Geo Metro. Yes, you're entitled to an F-150, not a Geo Metro. A Geo Metro gives you four objections. I mean, really? Four objections the whole trial. He should have filed a motion to suppress. He should have filed a motion to quash. This is not complicated stuff. This is elementary checklist stuff that any lawyer doing him a decent job 1 year out of law school should have said, this is a problem. This is a problem. So with that, I'm out of time. I'll come back on my reservation and talk about the other issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doug Norman for the state. Whenever I think someone gives you such glowing words of praise, that's about the time that I find that I'm going to say something totally stupid. And I hope I don't say anything too ignorant after being given such a wonderful compliment. As far as the warrant itself, you know, I am not arguing the warrant, but at the same time, I always hate to concede things because, you know, I'm not the smartest lawyer in the room. And if you guys can find something, you honorable gentlemen can find something and lady can find something in there that would support the warrant, you know, you might be able to. So I'm not going to concede the issue. Maybe you can find something discreet in the facts.
Let me ask you this. Let's say it's insufficient. And the lawyer, because we're looking at it through the eyes of ineffective assistance, so the lawyer should have seen it, and he should have filed a motion to suppress, and then it would have been granted. But you're saying that the cell phone data would have gone in anyway.
The cell phone data, I think, would have because of the privacy interest question, or at least it's not settled law that it would have been granted. It's not settled law that he had a privacy interest in that. And I think, you know, in my brief, I cite some of the language from the Carpenter case and the Sims case. And it's quite evident in the Carpenter case itself, you know, they say they left open the possibility. This was the Carpenter case was 7 days, and they clearly left open the possibility that a warrantless search of a more limited period would not invoke the Fourth Amendment. And that's on page 2217, note three, noting that it was not necessary to decide how long a period is acceptable, and holding that accessing 7 days of CSLI constitutes a Fourth Amendment search. And the Court of Criminal Appeals later in the 2019 case of Sims, and I quote the full paragraph there where they talk about the fact that whether a particular government action constitutes a search or seizure does not turn on the content of the CSLI records. It turns on whether the government searched or seized enough information that it violated a legitimate expectation of privacy. There is no bright line rule for determining how long police must track a person's cell phone in real time before it violates a person's legitimate expectation. Whether a person has a recognized expectation must be decided on a case-by-case basis. And as just an analogy, if I may, Your Honor, my kids were playing Battleship the other day. And I'm sure you all know how the game goes. You know, you have a parameter where the ship could be, and you call out particular places within that parameter, and it's either a hit or a miss. Well, we're in the process now of a battleship game with regard to how long is an appropriate amount of time before a Fourth Amendment right arises. And we've got some cases that have got, you know, a hit here, a miss there. Until we get enough cases to say that one day is enough to implicate a privacy interest, we don't have settled law there.
And I want you to clear something up for me, because maybe I'm missing something. The affidavit concerns one phone number.
I believe so.
Correct? And who did that phone belong to?
I thought there were affidavits for both of them. It's just separate affidavits, I think.
Oh, I'm guessing we only got one as an exhibit then.
I think that's right, Your Honor, because Nelson was the one that, you know, provided that to you. But I believe there were separate affidavits.
Okay. Well, then I don't have anything else.
And let's see. And they cited a little bit of the language on what's required for a warrant. But again, if you have no privacy interest, there's no need for the warrant in the first place. The warrant is essentially superfluous. Counsel mentioned ineffective assistance on a number of other issues that were not raised in the brief. Things like a motion to sever. There was no allegation that he was ineffective for failing to file a motion to sever. Making only four objections at trial. There was no allegation that other objections could have been made which would have been successful. And in fact, you know, there were two attorneys participating in a trial where very similar evidence was being offered against both clients. So it's entirely reasonable not to have both attorneys jumping up at the same time, but to have some sort of an agreement as to which attorney would raise the objection. And, you know, if the objection were sustained or overruled, the other attorney, if it were overruled, the other attorney could jump up and object then. as well. But there's, you know, we don't have an indication as to how these two were participating. If you really wanted to raise ineffective assistance on failure to make all these other objections, it should have been raised, and it should have been explored in a separate record where we could understand better what the participation was, what the agreements were between the attorneys.
So other than the cell phone data, is there other evidence that would corroborate the
I think if
organized
you look,
criminal activity or the theft itself?
Sorry. I think if you look at, you know, the entire record, what you did have, you had the informant, the accomplice, Blake, and he's, of course, testifying they all participated together in this enterprise. Now, you do have to connect both Jesse and Nelson to it. Admittedly, they need some corroboration. You had the cell phones there. That was some corroboration. You had a witness, didn't identify them in particular, but he identified all three of these men participating together in the criminal activity. You have their cell phones traveling together, and it's not just one unique spot. It's traveling together the whole day in the whole process of stealing the tractor and then taking it back and coordinating with each other. And in addition, because the gravamen of engaging is the ongoing criminal activity, in addition, you have a lot of evidence that these people, and you know, it was several law enforcement officers all testifying to their knowledge of these participants and others participating together in a whole series of criminal activities. You know, this was an ongoing thing. This was not a single shot. This was these three participants and others participating in robbery, in burglaries, thefts, other criminal activity. You put all that together, and I think you have clearly sufficient corroboration.
You provided the court with additional citations for this matter. Can you briefly speak to those? I don't recall
yes.
that you addressed those two cases, so I would be curious as to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. May I grab my?
Certainly.
The additional citations are just things that I found. You know, whenever I write the brief and then I come back to it at oral argument, inevitably I find other things that I missed or that I wish I had put in there. So one of them was the Jackson case, which it's not earth-shattering. It just says that when the appellant claims his trial attorney was ineffective for failing to file a motion, he must show the motion had merit and would have been granted. I didn't recall actually putting that in there, but I think that's just another sort of piece in the puzzle that you have to examine when you're looking at ineffective assistance for failing to file a motion or make an objection. And the Echo case, defendant lacks standing to complain about a violation of his co-defendant's rights. And I wanted to put that in there just to show that, you know, we have the general proposition that, you know, rights are personal, privacy rights are personal to the individual. I wanted to show that that had been applied in other cases where you had co-defendants. And the final thing in regard to tolling.
Going back on that point, if we find that the both of these defendants had that right to privacy, then in this, the jury shouldn't have heard either one of the evidence for on this geolocation on whatever was obtained through the warrant, and then all you're left with is police officers testifying, correct?
Well, it's interesting. If it had been tried separately, you could have had the geolocation for one, the absent, or the other, the non-tried defendant.
Right, but that's not what happened. Here, the jury ended up hearing both. So, essentially, if we find that this affidavit, which is pretty much the same with both phone numbers, was deficient, and that there should have been a motion to suppress and it should have been granted, then the jury shouldn't have heard any of it.
I would disagree to one extent. I think the jury could have heard it, but the other side would have been entitled to an instruction to disregard with regard to the party it didn't apply to.
Okay.
I know that's not the ideal circumstance, and maybe that raises... They should have raised ineffective assistance for failing to sever under those circumstances, but that's not before the court. That would be one possible remedy is to file a motion to disregard as to the particular party who has the privacy interest. Disregard as to Nelson with regard to his own data. Disregard as to Jesse with regard to the data on him, but you can consider the other persons, possibly. If I may speak just briefly on the tolling, when counsel says these are entirely separate offenses, and when they cite to the West case, I think it's important to look at West when it says that the gravamen of law offending conduct in each indictment was not necessarily the same. They went to the gravamen of the offense to determine that there were separate offenses. What, in other words, is the meat of that offense? And the Court of Criminal Appeals has said that in engaging in organized criminal activity case, the gravamen is the circumstance surrounding the conduct, the existence or creation of a combination that collaborates in carrying on criminal activities. That's the meat of it. It's not the individual crimes being committed. And in this case, both indictments charge basically the same meat. For that reason, we think tolling should apply. It is the same offense. I think when you read through it, it becomes painfully clear they're charging the same offense in both indictments. And I will stand on my briefs unless the court has other questions.
Any other questions?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
I knew you'd get some time back. Are you ready? Let me get the time up. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Counsel's talk, again, I'm amazed and impressed at the attempted carve out of let's look at just what you got used at trial versus what 38B says on what's, you know, obtainable with search warrants in the scope of this being a Fourth Amendment violation. And it totally forgets about, and I don't want it to be lost, that we have 38B. Our legislature got together and said, this is the rules. If you want it, get a search warrant with probable cause. We don't even get to get in to, is the warrant too broad or not? Because it doesn't have probable cause. It's not even close. I mean, it takes one grand jury subpoena to the cell phone provider. Whose phone is this? This phone number, who's it belong to? Jesse White, Jerome White, Mike Elliott, who knows? Anybody. It's one simple grand jury subpoena and you have the answer. And then we at least have somebody to even connect it to. They didn't even do that. Nothing. The trial testimony was some investigations years ago, we think this phone number was associated with Jesse White, but yet that doesn't even make it into the affidavit. So anyway, I've spent enough time on that. 3823 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure is unique, and it says that in Texas, the exclusionary rule works for anybody violating, not just police officers. It's more narrow than almost all the other states, maybe all the states, and federal court too. Texas can include greater protections than federal law. Carpenter's federal law. 3823 applies, 38B applies, and it says specifically what they're supposed to do. They didn't flat do it at all. They didn't come close. So I got other issues to get to, and I got a lot of things to try to cover, which I believe is the gravamen, and I think you can see it in my brief. There's a reason why I put it number one and two, and that's cooperation. 3814 says we must cooperate. It says a conviction cannot be had upon the testimony of an accomplice unless corroborated by other evidence tending to connect the defendant with his offense committed. And the cooperation is not sufficient if it merely shows the commission of the offense. The test we know from years of case law is you take out the co-defendant's statement to make this analysis and you look at what's left. In this instance, all they got left of any substance is he was in the area within 3 miles or whatever it is of a cell phone that may or may not even belong to Jesse White, may or may not even been in his possession. Who knows? There is, I think, I don't want to lose sight of what Jackson County is. The county, according to the last census, is 15,000 people. 90% of those people are either whites or Hispanics. 10% are black. Why is that important? Because on this day, it happened in the middle of the day, the testimony when this tractor was being stolen was that two Mexicans were stealing the tractor. That's what the testimony was. Jesse White and Jerome White cannot be confused by any stretch of imagination with whites or Mexicans. Their skin is very dark. That's in the middle of the day. And the testimony wasn't just a casual observer. And I think it's very important. Please don't lose sight of this. It was from a witness that was at the end of the street and even had the license plate number that turned out to belong to Powell. So that's the degree of discernment that was being used to notice the license plate number, take it down, and notice that the people committing these crimes were two Mexicans. That's important because as lawyers and as justices, when we're talking about ineffective assistance of counsel, and we're talking about some very substantial rights being taken from us here in the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments, and Article 1, Section 10 of the Texas Constitution, we got to lay our head down at night and feel good about what's happened. At the end of the day, my client got tried by a co-defendant who got up there and testified to loosen the noose on his own neck and say, oh, this is what everybody did. And the best evidence they have to corroborate it is he was within 3 miles of the location. Not one other single piece of evidence was not enough. And the fact that the lawyer, the Geo Metro lawyer, was sleeping doesn't change the analysis of what evidence is there to show Jesse White or Jerome White did anything wrong. I know they don't have to, with corroboration, prove every element of the case. I concede that. That's the law. But they still must show that he's got some connection to this other than just the commission of the offense. And in this one, they got nothing. They truly have got nothing. And when the only thing that the counsel here, again, I like him, but when he's saying, look, they got all this other testimony about committing all these crimes all over the place. That's only coming from Powell. When the cop talks about it, it's just a generic term. He's associated with the case. What in the world is associated? What does that mean? Was he a judge in another case? I'm saying that facetiously. Was he a witness in another case? Was he a victim in the other case? Or was he a defendant in the other case? I mean, these are loose words, okay? But they had words mean something.
You said that if the cell phone data came in, they would put him at 3 miles from the area.
The testimony, I think the lady's name was Gardner. I think I may be wrong on her name.
And so, where did appellant live in the area?
No, appellant lived far away from there. Okay, well, I say far. He's not. He lived allegedly, according to what the testimony was, in Fort Bend County. Okay, obviously Jackson County is a little bit of a drive, but I mean, there's lots of reasons why he may be down here. There was no testimony. Nobody asked him. You have cousins down here. Your mama lived down here. Your sister lived down here. You work down here. Why are you down here? I mean, there's lots of innocent reasons why. Now, you know, maybe the reason he was down here, maybe he was out there stealing tractors. Maybe he was. I wasn't with him that day. Okay. But what evidence do we have to show that he was stealing tractors? We don't have anything. That's the problem. It's the problem with corroboration on the underlying offense of theft. And it's the problem with corroboration of this theory of engaging in organized crime. And when we look at Wynn case, it's been the very settled law forever that we know that you have to have more than one offense. And they don't literally have nothing. Not one single victim testified from one of these other crimes. Nobody testified. He didn't have my permission to take my trial.
Well, if that cell phone data came in, then Mr. Powell alleges in his testimony that there were several crimes committed during a period of time.
But there's nothing even arguably that is associated with those cell phones with any other crimes. They never even say, not one single time, that there was a crime in Fort Bend County on this date and so-and-so had his car stolen or his tractor stolen or whatever. then it wasn't without permission. They don't even mention it. The only thing Powell is saying generically, oh, I was following him around or something like that. That's it. And the cops say, well, he was associate. What is that? That is not connecting him to crimes. It's not satisfying Malone. It's not satisfying Wynn. It's not corroborating. You still have to have something connecting him to the crime other than mere presence. And they just don't have it. They just don't. There's just nothing. This is the one that hurts me. This is the one I go home at night and say, this man, he didn't just get, you know, a couple years in prison. He got 45 years in prison for stealing a tractor based upon a co-defendant that's cutting a deal to come in and say, oh, yeah, we were all involved in this, without one piece of real evidence connecting and doing anything wrong. They don't take any fingerprints. They don't do any DNA. They don't even try to see if the phone's even his. I think they had Powell's cell phone. They didn't look at it. They didn't do anything. And all they want to do is just come in and say, oh, Powell says it's good, so let's convict him and give him 45 years in prison. I mean, he's not even that old. I mean, it's baffling to me. Baffling. I mean, I was prosecutor for 17 years. I tried more than 200 criminal cases, felonies myself. It's baffling to me how this lawyer did nothing. And it's baffling to me how Jackson County tried all these people together and just ran wild with this without doing elementary work of even connecting a phone and just simply doing nothing to corroborate his testimony. I thank you all very, very much. I've enjoyed this a lot. I'm sorry I'm animated. Okay, I get riled up. I get going. Okay, but I appreciate this very, very much. I know this is serious. I hope that in the weeks and months coming up, that all of you laying on the bed at night with your head on the pillow and you think, this is pretty bad.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This case will be under submission.